Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, August 15th. I'm Ray Graff. This is always a great day because cheese is on the table today. Joining us is Shalina Bridgham from Four Fat Fowl, a state-of-the-art cheese-making facility in Steventown, New York. Mary Rizzo from The Cheese Traveler, a purveyor of fine handcrafted domestic and imported cheese and much more in Albany. And John Fisher, a retired professor at the Culinary Institute and author of the CIA's Kitchen Pro Series volume on cheese identification, classification, and utilization. If you have a question about cheese, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Shalina, John, and Mary, and plenty of cheese coming up after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and we explore cheese today. With us is Shalina Bridgham. Shalina has been in the specialty cheese industry for over 20 years. Since 2013, Four Fat Fowl, located in Steventown, has reflected its commitment to making locally sourced, handcrafted cheeses of the finest quality. Mary Rizzo is proprietor of the Cheese Traveler in Albany. The Cheese Traveler offers handcrafted, domestic, imported, traditional cheeses, charcuterie, sandwiches, pantry items, local organic meats. It is a wonderfully fragrant store. And John Fisher is the author of the CIA's Kitchen Pro Series volume on cheese identification, classification, and utilization. He's been in the food and hospitality industry for over 40 years and recently retired from the Culinary Institute. Fun fact, he introduced Martha Stewart to Flavor Flav. I didn't even know that. Very, very impressive. We'll get to that later or not. If you have a question about cheese, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Shalina, John, Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Hello.
Mary, what's happening over at the Cheese Traveler these days?
We are bustling over there. So many cheeses, so much fun during the summer months when all cheese is coming into its own.
Is this the season? I didn't realize there was a season.
So, you know, they're done calving, you know, in the spring, so that's the first milk. And then cheeses that need to age for 2 or 3 months are all of a sudden ripe and ready. It's August. We're heading into the end of pasture, moving more towards the winter and grass.
Did you say moving?
I was waiting
for that. You had to know it was coming.
You're very, very clever. Fisher, what's happening with you since you retired? You playing a lot of shuffleboard?
No, disc golf.
Disc golf, really?
Yeah, there's actually a course right near me in Hyde Park.
Aren't you a little long in the tooth for that?
No, I'm long in the tooth for ultimate, which is what I used to play.
I see. Well, you know, you could always go to the dog track, right? Something that's what retirees used to do in the old days.
And smoke a stogie?
Yeah, exactly. Wear some kind of a straw hat. Shalina Bridgham. How are things at Four Fat Fowl? You got the big event coming up, huh?
Coming up on Saturday, tomorrow. Ready for it.
Remind me what this event is again.
This is Celebrate Local. It's a celebration of all things local cheese, local beer, local cider, local crafters.
How many years?
This is our 8th one.
Whoa. Wow.
It's a free community event. You come, the Luster Kings come and rock it out all afternoon.
They're back again. They come every year, huh?
They love it. Mark actually is kind enough. He waits for January when I set the date, and we get it. We get our date. Because he loves it. He's like, this is a great day.
Does he work for cheese?
No. He does not work for cheese. He doesn't work cheap either, but it's worth it.
So if people want to find out about it, and we'll talk about it before the end of the show too, but if people want to find out about this event in Steventown, how do they do that?
There's a flyer at fourfatfowl.com on the website, and it's also all over our Facebook. There's a Facebook event set up for it, and check it out.
Cool enough. All right, cheese is the topic, people. First of all, we didn't ask how are things at the how is the cheese at the Four Fat Fowl?
We're cheesing. Cheese is good.
By the way, you're colorful today.
What's up with that? I am very colorful. Well, some of the cool crafters they just make really cool stuff.
Oh, they're going to be there
tomorrow. They're going to be there tomorrow with these cool tie-dye rompers and these cool earrings.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah, look at those. What are they? Yeah. I don't have my actual glasses.
They have dandelions in there. There's dandelions in the ball, and then there's a green gem, and they're dangly.
How do you get them to grow in there?
I'd have to ask the crafter. I stick to cheese and music, Ray, and I'm a simple girl. I keep it there.
Okay.
Beyond that, forget
it. Let the experts do their job.
And yeah, and then we're going to have a sip of beer, and then I don't even know about the cheese and the music.
Okay, so, and speaking of that, John, you brought beverages, too. Now,
yes.
Now, you coordinated with Mary and Shalina a little bit, so you have beers that sort of go along with cheese?
Actually, speaking of which, during some of our emails back and forth, there was some language used by younger people that I just don't get.
Yes,
so I brought this just in case.
This is a slang translator. Oh, my gosh. I got to see this thing. Oh, slang-o-matic.
So now you'll be able to understand your daughters.
That's right, because Mary, I believe, dropped a 6-7 on us during the thread. Oh, look at this.
I still have no idea what that means.
So Boomer says gross, Gen X says grody, Millennial says nasty, and Gen Z says vile.
Huh.
I did not know that. And who vetted this? You know what?
It's for you. It's a gift, yes.
I think Mary, you know, she's the wordsmith here, so she'd probably like it best. The number here, if you have a question about cheese, and we have experts in the house, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, here's one that came in via email from Martha in Red Hook. Many years ago, we used to buy a sharp cheddar cheese from a dairy that sold at the Saturday Farmers Market at Grieg's Farm in Red Hook. Does anyone know what dairy or cheese maker that was? It was delicious. It's pretty vague.
I got nothing.
It could have been so many.
How many years ago?
It's just many years ago.
And there's so many delicious cheddar makers. It's so hard to pinpoint from. I got nothing.
What's that?
Oh, it's the first beer.
Oh well, geez.
Oh, I thought it was in this. I was like, really? That? Yeah. That cup?
Okay, it's a little cloudy.
It's supposed to be.
All right, fair enough. Mary, as far as cheddar goes. And you know cheddar from around the world and also domestic cheeses. Yeah. Vermont has a great rep. How's New York doing?
New York is coming into its own. The New York State Cheese Council has, you know, stood itself up, which is a new thing for us. We're collectively talking. Artisan New York cheesemakers, you know, meet, you know, I think it's a couple times a year during the council's meeting. And, you know, cheese is delicious.
Well, yes.
And it loves you. Cheese loves you.
Really?
Yes.
What if you're lactose intolerant? Here's an email from Anonymous. I'm one of those new age lactose intolerant folks.
There we go.
Meaning I'm for sure lactose intolerant, but nothing is going to keep me from eating cheese. Trying new cheese. I love cheese. What are some tips to find cheeses that are easier on my poorly constructed stomach? Are there cheeses that are more sensitive to lactose intolerant folks? Any favorites among the panel? We'll start with Mary, and then we'll go around.
So lactose naturally ages out of cheese by the 1 year point, usually a little before then. Plus, the way the proteins are structured is different between cow's milk, goat's milk, and sheep's milk, and water buffalo. So there's lots of different options to experiment with in terms of the milk as your source. But the older that cheese gets, the less lactose, so probably easier on the tummy.
Okay, so just go for something that's over a year. Did you say water buffalo?
Water buffalo milk, yeah.
Really?
And yak.
Yeah, water buffalo mozzarella is, it's a thing.
It's a thing.
Where can you find a water buffalo?
Italy. Southern Italy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And there's also a herd down in Texas. The one that was in Vermont like a decade ago moved to Canada.
Ah.
Just saying.
Interesting. Well, there you go. The number here is 800-348-2551. All right, let's try this beer, John Fisher. And what cheese would go with this?
I was assuming that we would start with some of the calmer double or triple cream cheeses.
I have no idea. Okay. So one of Shalina's.
So probably the
St. Stephen's.
Which one is the St. Stephen's?
Or whatever you wanted us to try
first. The
chunkier
one, the bigger, chunkier
this
one. We'll
right
go
here?
With that one first.
So this is Hoegaarden. It's a Belgian white. It's a Belgian wheat beer with coriander and orange peel. This is a brewery that actually was saved by a guy named Pierre Celis, who then went down to Texas and started a brewery in Austin, and he made Celis White, like 30, 40 years ago. It was one of the first craft beers that I tried. And this is the brewery that he saved, essentially, in Belgium. And all the beers today are Belgian.
Well, I love this beer, and I always love the St. Stephen. Now, Shalina, you were worried. Every time you come
it's
to
young.
The show.
I don't ever have anything aged properly.
And it's delicious.
It is delicious, but I prefer it much older than this, where the rind starts to get a little brown, and I could literally cut the top off and just, scoop it out. This is
goo. You want goo?
Yeah, I want it just to be better. Like Mary's got some something here aged.
Harbison.
Which one is this?
Harbison. Yeah, that's Jasper's Harbison, and that is properly aged.
And that's on the plate.
On the spoon.
Oh, which one?
You
is...
don't have to tell me twice.
It's on your little this wooden one. Spoon.
Ah, it looks like pudding.
And so mm-hmm. that one mm-hmm. is ripened mm-hmm. right inside a spruce bark. So a piece of wood wraps around this cheese. And so as it ages, that piney, woodsy comes right into that paste. I get distinct, like, yellow mustard notes with this guy.
Fisher, what do you think?
I'm not so sure I'll get the yellow mustard, but that's just me. But I can tell you it is delicious.
It is delicious. Our number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll take one more email here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll try some more cheese here on an all-cheese edition. We only do a couple of these a year, and I get very excited about it. Jerry writes in, I'm currently enjoying a delicious Dogfish Head 60-minute IPA. What would go well with this beverage?
Cheddar.
Cheddar?
Sharp cheddar.
Now, why do you say that?
Because it works.
Because of the acidity in the block cheddar, it allows that saltiness in the beer to come through, and it'll stand up to it. You'll be able to taste the cheddar and enjoy it with the beer.
It's pairing flavors of equal power, basically. If you put it with a craft single or something, it doesn't taste like anything. Anyway.
Why would you look at me when you say that, by the way?
Take the plastic off first.
Okay.
But a sharp cheddar is, just classically cheddar with IPAs, more so American IPAs than English IPAs.
When did the crystals start? You talked about aging out the lactose after a year. When do those crystals start? Because that's what I go for.
So that is an amino acid that's always been in the milk. Just as it dries out, as all that moisture goes away, they become more pronounced. And so, look for them around that 1 year mark.
Yeah,
they become less soluble as there's less water. So the tyrosine crystallizes and gives you the crunch. So it's not salt.
Okay. Let's take a break. It does taste salty, though. Good point. Let's take
a break. The cheese around it is salty.
Okay. We're taking a break now. It's just some Steely Dan. 800-348-2551. Cheese with Shalina, Mary, and John. We'll be back. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, and we're joined by Mary Rizzo of the Cheese Traveler in Albany. Shalina Bridgham from Four Fat Fowl in Steventown, where the big townwide event goes tomorrow. And John Fisher from the Culinary Institute. By the way, it kind of has a hippie scent in here. And I don't know if it's you, but I think it might be that soap.
Oh, yes. Cottage Creek Farms, another cool vendor that'll be there.
So what is it? I mean, patchouli soap?
Where did it go? Patchouli, sandalwood. She's
mine
got,
is lavender.
Lavender, and you got a lavender honey. And did you see how beautiful yours is?
It has dried lavender right on top.
We'll get the soap, though. The mold is so, so pretty.
Yeah, that is nice.
And John's is a coffee one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's Ooh, got she does cool stuff.
Bathing with coffee. Yeah, genius.
So you got the
double,
beer.
Doubles the fun. It gets two things done at the same time.
Caffeinate and,
have in the morning.
And
yeah.
Exfoliate. Beautiful.
Literally, you can get your soap and you could, if you wanted to, get soap and jewelry and beer and cider and cheese plates. There's so much fun. And Luster Kings.
And music with the Luster Kings and their great Americana. 800-348-2551 as we talk cheese today. We had a little brief discussion during the Steely Dan underwriting interlude about cheese paper. Why is that better? John, you said that's better than saran wrap. Why?
Well, cheeses are living, breathing things. And if you wrap them in plastic, you suffocate them. Mm-hmm. So cheese paper is slightly porous. If you go to a great cheesemonger like Mary's, or you go down to Murray's or something in the city, they wrap their cheeses in cheese paper, and that's what you should keep it in your refrigerator.
Ah.
Yeah, or if you could keep them naked in a Tupperware, he'd be happy there, too.
Naked. You know, John, have you been to the Cheese Traveler?
I'm sorry to say I haven't.
I have a cheese head in my family that demands cheese at the holidays.
The one who stole the book I gave you.
Exactly, exactly. And I tell you, you walk in there, especially at the holiday time, it is, it's a fabulous place to be. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, so if we're doing cheese and beer tasting, what's next?
The beer, this is Saison DuPont, which is a lot of beer people consider.
I'm familiar with the DuPont products. They're very good.
One of the greatest beers on the planet. I mean, this is one of the few beers that on Beer Advocate gets 100 points.
Oh.
Of 100. So it's my favorite Saison. It's a Saison. And it's bottle conditioned, so that's why there's yeast in the bottle, which is why there's so much foam. And it's also why the bubbles are so small, kind of like champagne bubbles. So it's got a little bit of farmy funk, which is why it will go with whatever cheeses we move on into.
That's got some funk.
So what cheese would we pair with this?
Well, if you want to make it herbalicious, the Alp Blossom I gave you will just amp up all of that flavor.
Aren't we all herbalicious?
Some of us more than others.
Hang on. So which one is the herbalicious one?
The little triangle. One.
This little triangle.
That's the one.
I see.
So this cheese is made in Germany. It's cow's milk. And on the rind are all of the edible flowers and herbs that the girls were munching on before they were milked.
Huh.
It's a beautiful wheel.
This is great cheese.
Yeah, that's lovely.
This is crazy. It really has a unique flavor. Mm.
You know, the only other cheese I've seen like that with all the herbs on it is Brandemore.
Is this a semi-firm cheese? Where does this fall in the firm? Semi? Okay.
It's a semi-firm cheese.
It is beautiful stuff. The number here is...
I love the texture.
And the beer is really good. Let's,
more of the best.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Rodney and Rhinebeck. Rodney, you're on.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call, guys. Hey, John. Hope you're enjoying your retirement.
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you as well, man. I miss making cheese plates sometimes. And Saison DuPont, good call. My question is Mimolette or Mimolet?
Mimolet.
Is it importable now?
Oh, yeah. I've got two different ages in my store right now. I like the extra aged at 18 months, but 12 months is still delicious. And, of course, 3 or 4 month old Mimolet melts wonderfully in a grilled cheese.
Was there some question about it not being importable? I mean, it's an odd way
to... Well, I think there...
Go ahead.
John, you got this.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's not because of the cheese mites that are growing on the outside. When the cheese is aged, it's allowed to be coated with cheese mites. There's actually a statue to cheese mites in Germany.
Well, of course.
There's a huge cheese mite
sculpture
To honor them. And they, in this case, they live on the outside of the cheese and they eat away tiny little... It looks like a cantaloupe a little bit. And
the
it has
cheese
these,
mite.
The Mimolet. I've never seen a mite that looks like a cantaloupe. But the cheese gets these little craters on it, and they allow the cheese to breathe and age probably a little bit more quickly, I would think.
I'll be darned. Rodney, are you good? You want to stay on the line?
No, I just want one more question, and maybe these guys know it. There's a cheese I love that's called Hudson Valley Red.
No.
Does anybody know what bacteria strain they use to make it? Instead of a...
Which creamery is it from?
Really?
Who makes Hudson Valley Red?
Twin Maple Farms.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Twin Maple Farms.
Huh.
No. So I think you stumped the panel.
Well, it's, you know, I used to serve it, John. I'm sure you had it at my place, but hey.
I remember the name barely, but I don't remember any details.
It reminds me of what Pampered Cow used to make. They used to make a...
Well, here's what I heard, and I don't know if it's true, and I never met the guys from there, even though I sold a lot of it, that they used human sweat as the
okay, all right, thank you. Hey, Rodney, appreciate the call, old boy.
Well, I'm serious, man.
Okay, that's fine. You're taking it into a dark, dark place. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Hey, over at Four Fat Fowl, do you ever use the human sweat, Shalina?
Not a chance.
No?
I just wanted to add that there is a New York State maker of a Mimolette-style cheese called Harvest Moon down in Goshen. So even a Mimolette-style, it can be a New York cheese, and that's also in my case.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We have Shalina Bridgham from Four Fat Fowl down in Steventown. The big event is tomorrow with the music and the cheese and the patchouli soaps and everything. John Fisher from the Culinary Institute, well, he's retired now and relaxing, but he wrote a great book about cheese, identification, classification, utilization. Also, Mary Rizzo from the Cheese Traveler in Albany. And this email from Tom at voxpop@wamc.org. We've had this question before. Is it safe to cut the mold off cheese and eat the non-moldy part? And that's from Tom in Williamstown.
Yes.
Well, it's safe. It's just not advised because you're missing out on texture and flavor.
Oh, you're saying eat the mold?
Eat the mold?
Yeah, eat the damn mold. Mold.
I think he means like a piece of cheese that got
mold on it.
Like your mother would tell you, cut that off.
Yeah, cut that off and eat the cheese. Yep.
I mean, you could. I mean, penicillin, right?
Oh, so you're okay. Just from our legal department, yes. You're not actually suggesting people eat the mold on the cheese.
Not green mold growing in spots on cheese. No.
Mary Rizzo, do you have a different thought on that?
Some green molds.
So here's that's the thing. I get this call at the shop all the time. I don't know what you've done in your refrigerator, so I can't really advise you.
Okay.
However, if you're growing a mold on the cheese's surface that's not the rind trying to grow itself back because you left it in there for 6 weeks, then you may have cross-contaminated your cheese. What did you cross-contaminate it with?
Yeah.
Is like the science question.
Ah.
If you've contaminated it with something inedible or something that would harm you, you can't just cut it off and move on.
Really? So the whole piece of cheese is ruined.
If it was raw cheese drippings that caused your bacteria to grow, yeah, you have a chance you've got salmonella growing or something of
Ouch.
That nature. So you got to be careful about how you store your cheese and where you store your cheese. And if it's a soft ripened cheese, meaning there's high moisture content, it's that moisture that's saying, hey, look, I'm food for somebody else living in your refrigerator. And so you're feeding somebody else.
Shalina.
But.
Go.
And I'm going to know enough to be dangerous here, so Mary's going to have to bail me out, please. So we in the States have a very pristine white Penicillium candidum mold that is beautiful and white and gorgeous to look at.
Delicious.
And I think you probably already know where I'm going with this. But if you go to a cheese shop in France or, wherever, not in the States, you are going to see white molded cheese with, in fact, green mold that is good for you
orange.
Or yellow and that you should be eating. Now, what is happening recently is the cave master at Murray's, Josh Windsor, had an article about a year ago on culture. It was very, really interesting, and it drew me in. So that's how interesting it was, because there was big words, lots of science, and I was like, oh, my God. So we don't have
Latin in italics.
We don't have. There is not enough of this beautiful Penicillium candidum, this beautiful white rind in the States to make cheese this beautiful always and forever. So he's doing a big push. A lot of companies are doing a push on educating the American market on why you can eat green mold. And in probably 5 more years, none of our cheese is going to look like this. It's not going to be beautiful and white and pristine.
Really?
Because we've run out of this. Again, enough to be dangerous. The article that Josh Windsor did, if you want to Google that article, whoever, I believe it was in Culture magazine, and it is... It's informative.
I mean, like
really interesting. So we're going to start to see, and probably, Mary follows this better, that she knows more than I, but I think probably in 5 years you're going to start to see green mold on the domestic market.
But like cheeses. there's a famous French goat cheese called Crottin de Chavignol and it's a beautiful little cheese from the Loire Valley. And here it's sold pure, pristinely white. But in France, it starts forming little dots of green mold on it. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, yes, I would buy that one with the dots on it. They like the ones that have aged a little bit and have grown you know,
I like your French voice.
Maybe.
Think of all those different colors as different flavors. And so if you stop thinking about them as a culture or a bacteria and you start thinking about them as flavors, we mix flavors in America all the time. In fact, we get crazier and crazier with how many different flavors you stir into one, you know, thing you're snacking on.
And just the trend of the restaurants, you know, fusion, American fusion, French fusion, Asian, you know, everything's being
fusion leads to confusion.
So let's leave no rind behind.
Right.
And taste them all.
Yes. That's what I was saying, is that he said about cutting mold off. My immediate reaction was, like, when I see at a cocktail party the people digging the goopy part out of the brie and leaving it, I just want to slap their hands.
Ah. That's me.
Oh, really?
I want the goopy part. So, I don't always want the rind.
You two should not go to the same party.
But I want the goopy part. Yeah. But it works out because my husband always wants the rind. So he's happy to have, I'll dig it out and he'll eat the rind.
Mary, just going back to something you said about being in the fridge, and gosh, who knows where this mold is coming from. You have many different kinds of cheese. How do you make sure that you are keeping the integrity of the flavor of all these different kinds of cheese?
So we keep our blues together and separate from everybody else. And when we cut the blues, there's only one cutting board that we allow to ever touch blue cheese. Because blue mold, that Penicillium roqueforti, it's a giver. It will give its mold to whoever comes near it.
Sharing is caring.
Exactly. But is that flavor terrible once it reaches a cheddar cheese? No. It's so delicious.
Like Dunbarton Blue.
Dunbarton Blue, yeah. We all went right there to Dunbarton.
Exactly. It's just such a happy...
And I know that when Colin McGrath of McGrath Cheese, who's a former student, when he was still making cheese at Sprout Creek, he started experimenting with blue cheeses, and he was aging them in the same room with his bloomed rind cheeses.
Yeah.
And after only a month or two, his beautiful, pristine bloomed rind cheeses started forming spots of blue mold. He's like, oh, no. Now, in France, that would have been fine, but Americans are skittish about that.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Cheese Today with Mary Rizzo of The Cheese Traveler, John Fisher, and Chalina Bridgham from Four Fat Fowl. Here's a funny email at voxpop@wamc.org. I know Ray doesn't want pictures, which I don't ask for pictures on the show during the various shows because nobody at home can see them. But this is pretty funny. Katie in Ballston Spa. I know Ray doesn't want pictures, but I went to a water buffalo farm in Puglia, and they only serve a burrata made that day. What's burrata? There's a picture.
Burrata is a mozzarella skin that's been filled on the inside with stracciatella, which is strands of the cheese, and heavy cream.
Oh,
so
it's really
cheese
decadent.
Sauce inside of cheese.
Oh, I love that. Isn't that a beautiful water
buffalo?
You can get
great handmade burrata down at Rossi's in Poughkeepsie. They make it every day.
By the way, these water buffaloes, they're just lying around. They're lazy.
They're very lazy.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Well, we're working hard on making milk.
Their fat molecules are the fattest of the fat molecule sizes in any milk type.
Interesting.
Now, I do have a bit of a soapbox to stand on here.
Oh, here we go.
Because buffalo mozzarella in this country is looked on as a super premium product. And people say, oh, the buffalo mozzarella. Well, mozzarella is super high moisture, and it's only really made in Italy, except for, you know, the one down south. And by the time it gets to the United States, it started going sour. So Americans will say, oh, I love that tangy buffalo mozzarella. It's like, no, you don't. It's not supposed to be tangy. So only eat it at the place where it's made, because mozzarella should be eaten the same day or the day after it's made.
You know, you are such a snob. It's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, come on.
I stand on that cheese curd soapbox a lot, too.
Ha! Okay, fine. Jerry writes in, this is an interesting question. Are there variances in serving temperature for different cheeses? And should beer temperature be adjusted when serving with the cheeses?
The quick answer is yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you answer the cheese question, and then we'll go to John for the beer question.
Well, most Americans drink beer too cold. And with wine, Americans drink red wine too warm and white wine too cold. Everything should be closer to skin temperature. But beer, of course, there are some beers that should be served ice cold.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have any flavor on their own. I won't name any American-style light beers. But the beers that we're having today are actually a little bit too cold because I brought them up on ice. They'll warm up a little bit in the glass. But
let me just offer a counterpoint to this sort of hoity-toity.
Again with the hoity-toity.
You know, we were up in Maine, and I had some deep-fried lobster tails at this wonderful restaurant up by Nubble Lighthouse. And lager, ice-cold lager, good local lager, tasted so good with that.
That should be ice-cold. Champagne should be ice-cold. Mm-hmm. But a white Burgundy, like from Merceau, it should be served at almost the same temperature as a Beaujolais Village. It depends on the body of the wine and on or the beer and the complexity. I mean, you can have a if you served a an Imperial Russian Stout ice cold,
yeah,
it would be a sin. I'll come find you.
Well, you know, you don't want to have the stout much closer to what room temperature, right?
Yes, because of the huge body and the, you know, you want it cool enough that it doesn't, you know, taste too alcoholic. Mm. But you know, the more full-bodied anything is beverage-wise, the warmer it should be should be served. If it's a really light-bodied white wine, like a I don't know, a Mosel Riesling, I just finished the Germany chapter that I'm working on, and that should be pretty cold because it's only 8-9% alcohol and very light in body.
Let's take a quick break here. It's Cheese Today with Mary Rizzo from The Cheese Traveler, Shalina Bridgham from Four Fat Fowl in Steventown, and John Fisher from wherever he happens to be, because he's retired now. We'll be back. John Schofield on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. It's Cheese Today with John Fisher, Mary Rizzo, and Shalina Bridgham. All right, now I've been admonished by Shalina that we need to get to the plate of cheese
Mary's
that Mary
cheese.
Rizzo brought from the Cheese Traveler. All right, let's have some cheese.
And okay, so the fun thing I thought could be entertaining for us today is I brought you an American made and then a foreign made, and so you've got two different Parmesan Reggiano mm-hmm. DOP.
Okay,
and then you have one made in Wisconsin, just a Parm, because they don't have the DOP protection.
All right,
and so I'm not going to tell you who's who.
Is the Wisconsin Sartori?
Will this beer go with that? So I can cleanse my palate.
You don't have to tell me who's who. I'm just wondering.
It'll be good, but it won't be the best.
All right, here we go.
I should be able to know the Sartori.
I love Parm.
Well, that's, you know, Americans don't know that it's an eating cheese. You know,
it's very snackable.
Oh, I know
amazing.
It.
It's got that little saltiness. In fact, I'm pairing it with a Prosecco tomorrow. And
it'll be very nice.
Parms are usually well aged. So back to your lactose guy.
Yeah.
Your Parms, your Pecorino Romanos, your Gruyere, Cave Aged Gruyere, all over a year. Cheddar, 12-month cheddar.
The less lactose.
Yeah. Old Goudas.
Okay.
So many options.
Oh, aged Gouda. I also love Brebbi, the sheep's milk cheeses from the Pyrenees.
All right, so who came from Brebbi's Italy? The lighter one or the more rosy-colored piece?
I wouldn't know, but I know that the lighter one seemed to have a little more zing to it, had a little more angle. It was angled.
I love the way you described cheese, right?
I know, well, my ignorance is my superpower. So, I don't know. I'll say the light one is from Italy.
That is correct.
Ha-ha!
American has a sweeter palate. And so you can tell with that Wisconsin Parm that there is more of a fruitiness to it, sweetness to it. It's also a touch younger. I couldn't match the age exactly.
I was going for the dry, for the texture. That's where I was like, the texture. Because I think the American Parms are more moist in
that's
general.
True.
All right, well, while we cleanse our palate here, what's this beer, by the way?
Oh, yeah, the new one.
So this is Orval. It's a Trappist beer from Belgium.
Okay.
It's a fascinating beer. It's considered by many beer experts as one of the greatest beers on the planet. And it is
really good.
It's in this cool bowling pin shaped bottle.
Let's see the bottle. Let's take a call while we're doing that. Oh, look at that.
Oh, that's really good.
And the chalice, the glass that goes with this beer, really cool, and was designed by the same architect who designed the brewery itself.
Huh. I'd like to do a 7-10 split with those, huh? Let's go to Juan in Kingston. Juan, you're on.
Hello, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good. Many years ago, I got to experience this wonderful Spanish Valdeón blue cheese that was wrapped in chestnut leaves. And fast forward a bunch of years ago again, I went to get it, and it was wrapped in foil with a chestnut leaf print on the outside. And I was informed that they could no longer import that cheese with the leaves on the outside because of some worry of cross-contamination or something. And I mean, maybe it was in my brain, but the cheese noticeably was different to me. And I'm wondering if anything has changed or if you have any suggestions on where I could find something similar to the actual one.
Mary's nodding, so we go first, Mary.
So the law hasn't been rescinded, so we're not getting those leaf-ripened cheeses from Europe into America. There are some Americans doing the wrapped leaf aging. I know Blakesville in Wisconsin is doing it with a sheep milk puck that is delicious. I know Rogue River does it out in Oregon with their Syrah grape leaf and some pear brandy to make a blue cheese for the, usually it comes out around the holidays. I think it's a fourth quarter cheese. But no, Valdeón is not coming to America in a chestnut leaf. And you're right, it does lose that nutty flavor, that richness, that sweetness that it brought.
Why is it against the law?
It's America protecting us from, you know, nature.
Ah, how nice.
and deliciousness. It's similarly, and correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it that raw milk cheeses aren't allowed to be sold unless they're aged 60 days or older, or imported even?
45 days before any. Otherwise, it has to be pasteurized, because we do get them here. They're just not raw. You're not going to taste a delicious raw milk, soft-ripened cheese in America.
Juan, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Before Shalina gets upset, let's have another piece of cheese. What are we going to have, Mary Rizzo?
Too late. She's upset already.
All right. So now we're moving on to Fontina.
Aha. Uh-huh. Mm.
You have got an Italian DOP, and you've got an American.
These are both Fontina.
They're both Fontina. And so people ask me a lot of times, how come this cow's milk cheese is so yellow, but the next batch is not.
So should we eat the rind on this? I know we go through this a million times.
So the rule of rinds, if you like how it tastes, eat it.
Well, you don't like rinds, do you?
No, but I love Fontina.
All right.
This is one of my favorite cheeses to use in mac and cheese.
That's
really?
Great.
I believe,
melter.
Is this the import and this the domestic? That's why it's so easy.
So the more yellow a cow's milk cheese is means the girls were grazing on grasses rich in beta carotene.
Really?
Because cows can't process beta carotene, and so it passes through to their milk. Goats and sheep absorb the beta carotene and don't leave it in their milk, which is why their milk is so white. It's like beautiful, brilliant white.
I didn't know that.
And so that's all it tells you. So how yellow something is, if it's a naturally made cheese, not artificially dyed in any way, shape, or form, is how much beta carotene the girls ate. That's all it tells you.
Well, you know, Parmigiano Reggiano has four different seasons, and the color changes throughout the year.
And that's why. Because they're eating different grasses.
So I'm not sure which is which. I would say that the first one that I tried, that the one that's a little darker, seemed like it had a little more
funk.
Yeah, it had some character to it.
That's this, the funk factor.
And this one is the lighter one is also fantastic, but it's more subdued. So I'll say this more subdued one is the American one.
That's correct.
Wow, I'm nailing it today, people.
I know.
You're better than you thought.
Well, no, hardly. Rick Orlando writes in, you're discussing my favorite subject. I wonder if any of your guests have seen the PBS documentary, The Cheese Nun. Anybody?
Pieces of it. My husband has watched it, so it's been on. I haven't watched it in its entirety.
According to Rick, it's about a cloistered nun who began studying mold and went to France and studied mold in caves and made some groundbreaking revelations. And when she was approached to continue her work, she went back to being a closer. I don't think a closer.
Cloister?
She was a salesperson and left it. If you haven't seen it, find it. And if you have, talk about it. So your husband's seen a little
My husband has watched, because, of course, anything cheese, that man's. But it, I have a hard time sitting and watching, so it's on. And we do cheese all the time. Honestly, it's cheese, Anthony Bourdain. I'm just Andrew Zimmer. I'm just like, God, can't we watch some murder?
So, yeah, you just want to hunker down with a Harlequin romance, right? I got you. Doug in sunny Englewood, Florida writes, can, say, a cheddar be made from any kind of milk, cow, goat, sheep, or even whale? A few years ago, the Granville Country Store in Granville, Mass., had a cheddar that was so stinky, strong, sharp, that when the store was sold, the new owner would not produce it anymore. Do your guests know where a cheese like that is sold?
So cheddars can be made from all milk types, just like practically any cheese. I do have right now a cloth-bound sheep's milk cheddar called Talia. I have a goat-cow blend called Chandoka. Of course, cow's milk cheese. But the biggest variation between cheddars arrives with the distinction of, was it cloth-bound or was it block-aged? And that makes a huge difference.
What kind of
flavor.
Difference?
And price.
And price as well, sure.
Intensity
of flavor.
A cloth-bound
cheddar is more earthy. Sometimes there's natural bluing that's occurred.
Yeah.
It's a more robust cheese, but less acidic. So it's not... People usually use the word sharp to mean acidity. And so if it pinches your salivary glands, it probably was aged inside the CryoVac packaging, which means, as we learned earlier, that it suffocated. And so it changed its pH when it couldn't breathe anymore and started freaking out.
Interesting.
And we call that sharpness.
Huh, I'll be darned. All right, now before we try the next cheese... Clearly, we got a framboise here, right?
Yep. This is a Belgian framboise from Lindemann's.
Beautiful. Mm.
And little sweetness is great with cheese because cheeses are salty. Salty and sweet.
This is one of my favorite beers of all time.
I knew that.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
No, it's really good. Have it. It's probably been 25 years since I've had one. All right, let's go to the phones. Bailey in Sheffield, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Good to see you again. I'm over here in Sheffield, you know. I've been trying to make my own cheese because I got goats.
Yeah.
So, I'm buying the milk, of course. I haven't bred mine, but I'm trying to make a nice goat cheese.
Okay.
And I just tuned in, so I'm not sure if you already answered this question. But what type of rennet would you suggest they use?
Okay. Well, let's ask our cheese mavens on this.
I would recommend calling Shireen, who is a goat farmer and just won a ton of awards at the New York State Fair for her delicious goat's milk cheeses. Ardith May, I believe the name of her company is Ardith May.
That's a great producer, yeah.
Her name is very small producer, doing everything correctly. We are a cow milk producer, and I'm just the cheesemaker's wife, so I'm not really sure.
You're doing all right. Mary, what do you think?
I am just a hobbyist cheese maker also.
Your own, though?
For fun.
Yeah?
Yep. And also to put in as a secret ingredient in my house blend cheese at the store.
Aha! All right, John, what do you think?
Gosh, I don't know. Asking whether it's...
I tell you, Shireen.
What type of rennet?
Yeah. Calves rennet or... You know,
we have, are you using animal cardoons rennet? Microbial rennet? Who knows?
Stinging nettles? I don't know.
Bailey, apparently we have not come up with a satisfactory answer here.
But Shireen at Ardith May will be happy to help you. She's a lovely woman and makes a lovely product and has lovely goats.
Did you get that, Bailey?
Google her up.
All right. That sounds good. All right.
Sell at Rhinebeck Farmers Market on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. So let's try another piece of cheese here. Or what's this white stuff on the cracker?
Yeah, so you have there a cheese from Canada called Grey Owl.
Oh, this?
This is an ash-ripened goat's milk cheese.
This is good.
That, you know, it's reminiscent of those Loire Valley cheeses. That raspberry framboise with this tangy
goat. It's very nice.
It just worked.
Did you say it was ash? What do you mean ash?
So it's vegetable grade food ash. So, you know, you basically cook down those vegetable scraps until they're dust. And then you're using that as a coating on the rind of the cheese to keep other things from penetrating it. It used to be back in the day in France, literally ash from your fireplace, and it was used to keep flies off of your fresh-made cheese product. Not that way anymore.
Interesting.
But certainly adds a piquant flavor and a beautiful element to your cheese.
Do you do that? Do you use
I just we just had our third-party audit, and my husband just brought in this big thing of charcoal, food grade charcoal, which is what me. And I'm like, what is this? This shouldn't even be here because the audits come. You can't have anything.
Right.
And I popped it in my office and put it away, and the audit went by. And finally I said, well, what is this? What are you? Oh, I was going to do some R&D with that.
So
he's going to play with it. I, you know, it's just, it says charcoal, you know, food grade charcoal. There's a lot of popular cheeses with it. Humboldt Fog comes in. It does seem to be on goat milk cheeses. Yeah. I don't know a lot of cow milk cheeses. RNG does the...
For a very good reason. It's because goat's milk has the lowest pH and the highest acid. And ash is basic.
Ah, so it evens out the pH. Genius. Speaking of goat's milk, let's go to Jake in Averill Park. Jake, you're on.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good, how are you?
Very well. Hey, I drive by the creamery, and I considered using goat's milk for your St. Stephen's, or if that would change the nature of the of that soft cheese so much. I will tell you, I've lived in France, Germany, and England, and it is one of the best soft cheeses I've ever had. So
hats
off to you guys for your St. Stephen's. But what can you tell me about goat's milk and making that?
No, absolutely not. Triple cream cheeses, I have to be, you know, here we have a lot of Jersey breed cows with a high fat content. So it's got to be milk from a Jersey or maybe a Guernsey. It's got to be one of the breeds that have high fat content. And then we add cream to it. Goat's milk is lean. It really lends itself nicely to... Chev. It's a very lean cheese. You can, you know, you can find some, you know, RNG does a couple aged cheeses, but you're not going to get that kind of cream line unless you're adding cream.
Well, like Kunick. Kunick has added cow's milk.
And they add, straight goat's milk.
Cow's cream.
You just can't get there.
All right, very quickly, let's go to Elaine in New Jersey. Elaine, where are you in New Jersey?
In Sparta.
All right, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay, I was a lunch lady, and I ran the food service of all just fifth grade, okay? And one day, the government sent only white cheese, okay? And it was such a huge problem because the kids opened their hamburger, and they were like, oh, I'm not eating this. They never saw white cheese.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, this brilliant teacher took a microphone and started talking to all the kids. He goes, so, what color is milk? And all the kids are raising their hand. White. What color is cream? White. What color is yogurt? White. What color is, you know, ice cream, whipping cream? And they're like, white, white, white. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and what should be the color of cheese? And they all said white. And he goes, that's right.
Trickery.
That's what we have. We have real cheese. We have real cheese today.
And that's nice.
What? That was fucking...
Whoops! Oh dear! Oh boy! Okay.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. Brilliant.
Thanks for that one. All right. So, don't worry. We have a delay. I worked it. Mary Rizzo. How do people find you at the Cheese Traveler?
My store is located on Delaware Avenue, in the south end of Albany, New York.
All right, and Shalina Bridgham, the big event, right? Is it right at Four Fat
Fowl? Right at Four Fat Fowl.
Steventown, New York. How do we find more information?
Steventown, New York. Facebook event, Celebrate, or 4fatfowl.com. It's cool. Check it out.
Well, that was exciting. We had someone drop an F-bomb on the show. There you go. Hi, John Fisher.
It wasn't me.
If people want to find you, what are you? Where are you? Down at the bingo game?
Next April at Brew U, I'll be doing another beer and cheese seminar I do every year.
And we'll see you here soon for another episode of Food Friday. Support comes from Berkshire Agricultural Ventures, a community nonprofit supporting local farms and strengthening the food system. Here for our farmers, BerkshireAGVentures.org. Body Work Professionals, licensed massage therapist, Albany, Saratoga Springs, Niskayuna, Nick Pavaldi, structural integration practitioner, Rolfer proprietor, 518-MASSAGE, or bodyworkprofessionals.com. And Historic Cherry Hill, presenting the world of James Knapp, an exhibition of contemporary art and historic artifacts exploring Black life in Albany through one of Cherry Hill's former residents, historiccherryhill.org. Well, that's it. An exciting ending to the program that almost cost us our FCC license. Thanks to Mary Rizzo, John Fisher, and Shalina Bridgham for being here. Thank you for listening. Remember, don't swear when you're on the radio. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday.